Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'm at Jack's Hill Cafe and Truck Stop, where I'm joined by new DAFS Trucks UK MD, Nigel Beckett. He'll be answering commercial motor reader questions over a fry-up. Welcome, Nigel.
Hello there. Hi. Good morning.
So, you've worked at DAF for more than 20 years now.
That's correct,
In fact, give us a brief run through of what you've done there. Just give us an idea, because you've done just about everything, I think, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, that's right. I've been at DAF for 23 years now. Started in 2003 after I'd done an apprenticeship with Scania. Moved there in the service department and worked in service for a good 6 years. Being an after sales manager, working in the warranty department, doing lots of projects for Brian Hannon, who was our after sales director then. And then in 2009, I went to work in sales. I was in sales for 5 years, really enjoyed that. Did a sales operations role for a couple of years. And then when I was the fleet sales director for 3 years, enjoyed that part of the business. It was really good. And then in 2014, I was lucky enough to be promoted to after sales director and go on the actual management team on the board of DAF UK. So that was an amazing thing for me to do, because that's what I really wanted to do when I started. I had a lot of I worked with Brian Hamlin, and he was a great person, really, so customer focused and dedicated to what he was doing, and I really looked up to him. So when I started, I thought, wow, to be the after sales director is a role I'd love to do. Yeah. So when I got that in 2014, that was fantastic. I did that for 5 years, and in that 5 years, Paccar supported me through an MBA at Henley Business School, which was an amazing thing to do, quite a challenging thing to do, but very good to do. And then when I graduated in 2019, I then got promoted to the business planning director. I did that for a few years, understanding the back end of the business, the budgets, the finance, the administration side of it, which was very good to learn. Not really my strengths. I like being out in the field and speaking to people and not stuck in the office. So I then became the Paccar Parts marketing and sales director when a guy called Trevor Mitchell retired. So I went to work for Paccar Parts, obviously a separate business to DAF Trucks, but all under the Paccar umbrella. Did that for 2 years, got a really good understanding with parts, which is so crucial for our business. And then I went back to after sales, and now, yes, I'm the MD, and I've been in the role for 7 weeks now. So it's it's been a great journey. I've really enjoyed it, and it's nice to see they put their faith in me. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting ride.
So all those different jobs must have been fantastic grounding then. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Was it always someone's plan to get you into this job? Was it always your plan?
From the beginning, it wasn't always my plan. I just wanted to be the service director. That was a job I always wanted. But because I started in 2014 and I was still relatively young, I actually thought to myself, well, actually, I could do better here. So being either the sales director or the MD would be an amazing job to do. So I sort of had it in my mind a bit. And then when Paccar put me through the MBA, I sort of thought that they were actually putting some good faith in me. So yes, I suppose then I really was keen to become the MD, and I made that quite clear over time. And I sort of hoping I might have got it when Lawrence left. It didn't happen then, which is fine. But now I've got my opportunity. So I'm really happy to be here, really, because it's sort of my dream job now.
Fantastic. So, although there's been a few exceptions over the years, Paccar has generally appointed a Brit to lead its UK operation.
Yeah.
Do you think there are advantages to having homegrown managing directors?
Yes, definitely. I think it helps knowing the market, understanding the customers, definitely understanding the legislation here. Very different with O licenses and the way that we service and maintain our vehicles. So having someone in the UK that understands that side of things, I think really works quite well. And obviously with the communication to our dealer network and customers and our body builders, I think always works quite well when you've got someone from the country they're really trying to succeed in. So yes, I think it's great. It's good to see. And
And they tend to keep people for longer as well, don't they?
Yes, yes, they do. Yeah, I think if it works pretty well and you're hitting your numbers and things are going all right, they'll put the faith in you and they'll want you to continue to do that. Obviously, there's lots of opportunity at Paccar. So sometimes when you are doing well, they like to take you somewhere else to try something different.
Yep.
But yeah, normally they do give the MDs a good bit of time. So it's you get a nice bit of consistency, which
is
good.
Great. So talk about hitting your numbers. Are you inheriting a healthy business?
Yes. It's an interesting time in our industry at the moment. Obviously, with electric vehicles coming, we're fully embracing that side of things. So that's an interesting way. And we're getting there. We've got good vehicles out. We've got the plug-in grant, which is all very helpful. So that side is running. And then really on the diesel side of vehicles, yeah, we're still market leader. We've got some excellent products out there with model year 25. It's pretty healthy at the moment. Yeah, it's a good time to come in. There's always challenges.
Yeah,
there's always going to be in this industry, but it's not a bad time to come. Yeah, it's good.
So have you identified any areas that need improvements?
Not so much improvements, but there's definitely areas that we're focused on to give better service for customers. We're in a very interesting time at the moment where we've got a lot of connect data boxes on our vehicles that will really give us some really nice information for proactive repairs. So that's definitely going to be an improvement for customers' uptime. So that's pretty exciting. And then, of course, on the dealer network, room for improvement there. We're really investing in quite a few areas now to build new dealerships, put more service lanes in place, make sure our ATF lanes are up to date. So there's always places to improve on, and that's where we'll focus, is really on the uptime of our vehicles. And with the technology we've got now, that should be quite exciting for us, really.
Yeah. Okay, great. This reader asks, several rival manufacturers have launched new 13-litre engines to prepare for Euro 7.
Yeah.
Will DAF follow suit? And if so, could we see power outputs beyond 530? That question comes up quite a bit, the 530.
That does come up a lot. Yes, definitely. We've never gone into the higher horsepower from our 530. Good question. I think Euro 7, a little bit early for us to know yet. Coming out in 2029, we will improve our engines, and I'm sure there will be new ones coming along. But for the horsepower, always get asked that, because I know we've started doing some big Cummins engines elsewhere.
That's right.
We haven't got any plans to change that at the moment, but that could change come Euro 7. I think it's a bit early days for that at the moment.
Okay, now I've got one here on direct vision requirements.
Oh, yeah.
They're only becoming more demanding. How confident are you that DAF's current cab platform can continue to meet future legislation?
Yeah. I think we are pretty confident of that. We took advantage of the weight and length dimensions a while ago, really modifying the cab. So, of course, the new generation vehicles, the XG, XF and XD, took advantage of that, and that really helped us with direct vision. Obviously, that's going to spread further than London soon. Already we can get to 5 stars with some of the XD product and 3 stars with the XF. I think we're in a really good place for that.
Yeah.
I think our cab's very suited to it, and the vision on the DAF vehicle now is excellent.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that. So this one asks, how have DAF's rear suspension systems evolved over the years, and why does the company continue to favour steel in mixer applications when some operators believe air-suspended tridems can offer better durability?
Yeah, good
it's
question.
Quite a specific question.
I get asked that quite a lot, actually. Because, I've been on our rear axles, especially on FADs, hasn't changed for a while. I mean, it's tried, it's tested, it works well. I know it's quite old nowadays, but it's a good system. And so, yeah, we have stuck with steel for a while. Easy to maintain, should be a lot less cost effective when things do go wrong later on in life. But yeah, you are right. But our Trident vehicles do have air suspension, FAX, FAW. You can have that as an option. So we should have the right options in those areas. But yeah, we still have the steel suspension and that works well for us.
Okay.
Good question.
Tesla and Windrose have both embraced center seat truck designs. Can you envisage a future where DAF or Paccar adopts a center driving position regardless of powertrain?
Yeah, so probably not so much with DAF, especially with the type of cab we've got. Maybe with Kenworth and Peterbilt, with the American trucks, with a bonneted one, it might be suited to it. I've actually driven a vehicle with the seat in the middle, and I found it quite hard to adjust to.
It does take a while, doesn't it?
It takes a while to adjust to. I think actually the way that we've got it set up works pretty well because it gives you that better vision. I think when you're in the middle, you need a lot more cameras or a lot more mirrors, and it's quite hard to judge things. So not probably something we would look at, and I think it takes too long to adjust to it. But possibilities maybe in America where it's much more open roads and you've got the bonnet in front of you. But I think it's weird for the passengers as well. Sitting in the back feels strange.
That's
when
right.
You want to be your co-mate wants to be next to you, not behind you.
Yes. Chinese manufacturers have transformed parts of the car market in a remarkably short period of time.
Yeah.
Are trucks next? And should Europe's established manufacturers be concerned?
Yeah. So lots of talk about Chinese manufacturers, isn't there? They've got some good products out there. So we definitely can't become complacent with that. I know that some of them are coming into Northern Europe. They offer a good vehicle. Whether they've got the backup there and the network and the parts supply that we've built over years. But, it's something we need to be mindful of. They give an extra option to operators, which actually, I suppose, is good in a way. You want that competition. Maybe even helps us speed up on our technology. But you'll see that we're fully engaged with EV. We were very lucky to win the European Truck of the Year on the XD and XF EVs. We're investing heavily in that product. The technology's coming. The dealers are being set up. So while it's I wouldn't say it's a concern. It's quite exciting to see. I think we just make sure we're not complacent and we carry on. And then it just maybe just gives an extra option to an operator. But no, I don't think it's too much to worry about at the moment.
Yeah.
It's, we've got a big dealer network. We've invested in that. We've got the technology. So actually, I think it's nice competition to have. But we will see, because that's over time, we'll see how that does actually work out for everyone.
Yeah. I was with Ford Trucks in Turkey earlier this week.
Yeah. Yes.
And they've announced they are definitely coming to the UK with a new cab.
Wow.
In 2028.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They've made big inroads in Europe now.
They have indeed. Yeah, we see quite a few of them. I see a lot of them on the UK roads.
It's about 300 UK roads
any
time.
Yeah, they look a nice truck. I don't know too much about them, and they've obviously got to set up a network. But, interesting times in our industry,
absolutely.
Really.
So following Tata's acquisition of Iveco, do you expect further consolidation in the truck industry? Is PACCAR more likely to be a buyer, a seller, or simply happy as it is?
Yeah, so I think definitely with our suppliers, they'll be working together a lot closer. Whether more truck manufacturers will purchase each other, not sure. Obviously, Iveco was one that was out there that I'm sure PACCAR were probably interested in at a time. I think a lot of the consolidations probably happen with the European truck makers. Definitely our suppliers, they are starting to work closer together, which makes sense and probably helps us over time. And I suppose with PACCAR, are they a buyer or a seller? They're definitely a buyer. So I think, especially through North America, we are looking at into alternative fuels and solar panels and ways of generating energy is something that PACCAR are looking at. And I know they will be buying businesses there. Whether that comes into the in Europe, I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see. But we will definitely be a buyer rather than a seller.
Okay. So how much influence does the UK operation really have within PACCAR? And how often are you told that's a decision from Eindhoven?
Yeah, so we have a lot of influence in the UK. We're one of the biggest markets here. We've been market leader for over 30 years. We have Leyland, great help to us with the truck assembly plants.
Yep.
So we're the ones that lead the way with the LF and the XB. We are actually in control of a lot of stuff. It probably does seem like that because, of course, you will always get ideas from head office or things that they want to roll out and how that works in the countries. But, of course, we've got lots of different countries. So there may be ideas coming centrally, and that's where they all should come from because we should be joined up and aligned. But actually, once it filters through into the subsidiaries, then we do have quite a lot of say. So I know I've heard that before about, well, just Eindhoven tell you to do it. It's like, well, no, we have a very good relationship with Eindhoven, and we understand where they want to go and their future plans. We just need to roll that into our UK plans and take the good things at work. And then filter back anything that doesn't so we can grow together. I think one thing that's really going to help us, obviously our ex sales director, Russell Patmore, is now out in Eindhoven on the board as the marketing director. We've had David Kiss, who I've replaced. He's back in Eindhoven as European sales director. And we've also got Hannah. Hannah has been working in parts with us. She's going to take a senior role in Eindhoven. So actually, we collaborate and work really well together. So, yeah, we have a lot of influence.
Okay, great. Now, let's find out a little bit about you as well. For starters, we've just ordered ourselves rather big breakfasts. Is that the usual for you?
No, it's not. No, I normally don't eat too much at breakfast. I have a very busy morning. I have three young children, and I have a wife with a very good career in makeup. So we are forever juggling who's at home, who's not, who's doing what. So normally in the morning, if I'm at home and just going into the office, I'll be packing the lunch boxes for the kids, I'll be making their breakfast, and I might get a Weetabix myself or a banana, but having a nice big fried brisket is a treat for me. So normally it's very light, and then we're off and dropping everyone off and getting to work on time. So
do you see much of your family, or are you like me, you're out and about all the time and travelling?
It's a balance. Some weeks I'm away a lot. Next week I'm in Eindhoven for 3 nights. I'll be away from the family a lot. I'll have to work with my wife to make sure we've got cover. And then other weeks I'll be in the office 3 days a week, and I'm very lucky that the office is actually only about 10-12 minutes away from my house, so I can be there in the morning to drop off breakfast club. I can see them, I can leave a bit earlier and pick them up from after school club. So it's a balance, really. So I think I'm quite lucky in the fact I'm close to the office, so I do get to see them. And then other times, if I'm in Seattle for a week or Eindhoven for a week, then it works out. So at the moment it's working well.
Yeah.
And it's nice to do.
So when you do get some spare time, what do you fill that with? What are your hobbies?
Yeah, so I like clay pigeon shooting. I do a bit of that with my dad. I like to get out on my push bike. I do a bit of bike riding, not as much as I'd like to. When I was younger, I was very much into my triathlons. I'm not quite young anymore, so I've got a lovely bike in the garage. I try and get that out with the good days. I love my rugby union. Big fan of Chinner is our local team. Like to get to Twickenham now and again, keen on watching sports. And then we've got a lovely young Labrador. We love going out on family walks, and we're very blessed where we live. We're right in the countryside on the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire borders. We've got lots of nice little pubs and walks, and so that's what I try and do in my spare time with that. Yeah.
Excellent. Sounds good. Right, back to work now. So, some operators feel DAF has become a victim of its own success and can sometimes take customers for granted. Is that a fair criticism?
I don't think so at all. No, I think we're very close to our customers. We are successful, and that's a great place to be. Whether we're a victim of our own success, I don't think so. We've grown with the market, added more dealers where we need them. We've got a very strong service, parts and sales team that are very connected to our customers. So I'd like to think we don't get complacent, actually. And if there is any of that, then I'm always there to help out with that, because we're without our customers, it doesn't really work for us. So, no, I don't think that's a fair criticism. I think we're very close to our customer base, and we work with it. We are successful, but I think that's it's a good thing, really.
Okay. Now, DAF has been market leader, as you say, for more than 30 years in the UK. How would it feel to be the MD who presided over the year that changed?
Yes, now that's an interesting one, because I've never really thought about that until we
No
pressure. Yes. No, you are right. Yes, 31 years. We're still doing well. We have lost a couple of percentage of market share. So I'm coming in at a bit of a lower one. I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to think about all the good stuff that we do. We're with our customers a lot. We've got great products, a great dealer network. The backup's brilliant. So we'll carry on doing what we're doing, and hopefully we will stay market leader. If it does drop, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But no, we're just going to do what we do, because we do it well, and hopefully that won't happen, and I won't be the MT that oversees that.
Tell us, when a major fleet does decide to switch from DAF to another manufacturer, which obviously does happen,
yeah.
What's the reason usually given?
Yeah, there's a number of different reasons, really. Maybe it's capital costs, the competitiveness of the vehicles. Maybe it's a customer that we've worked with for a long time, but then maybe does want to try a different manufacturer. It's always good for customers to do that so they can see how good we are and how we match up to competitors. They might want to change something. It might be because of location changes. They've got another manufacturer's dealer a bit closer to ours. It could be a number of reasons, really. Obviously, we work closely with the customers and make sure that we carry on being there as and when they need us. But normally, it's around those types of issues that maybe crop up, or they just want to try a different truck sometimes.
Yeah. What I find so often is it just takes one salesman who's got a great history with a particular company to move to a competitor.
That's true.
And that's it. He takes the business with him.
Yeah, no, that's very true, actually. I think this industry is all around relationships. And if you've got that good relationship and you trust people, that can happen as well, yes, definitely.
So you've got the biggest dealer network in the UK, but biggest doesn't necessarily mean best. Is there room for improvement?
So on the network, I said before, we've been investing a lot in our network. So there is a bit of room for improvement there, definitely. We need to open up in different locations where we're not at the moment. We need to invest some of the sites we've outgrown. There's a bit of room for improvement there. We're always improving DAF aid, the breakdown service. That's a big area for us, and small little improvements help. It's the network where we see it, really. Adding new locations, making sure the brand image is there on some of our dealerships, and just investing in there will really help us.
Yeah. So what is one thing customers complain about most, and what are you doing about it? Difficult one,
Complain about most? Yeah, good question. I mean, for us, really, customers we're seeing, it's not really to do with the vehicles or something that we're doing. It's normally the economy. It's normally the fuel prices, uncertainty in the market, people delaying decisions because rates keep changing, costs are always going up. So normally when we're speaking to customers, the complaints are normally around that more than anything else. Like I said, there's always room for improvement. Sometimes we haven't got dealers in the right area for certain customers. But normally, actually, the complaints that I get is normally around the economy and how we can help our hauliers and customers a bit more, really.
Got you. Okay. Now, we always ask this same question. Do you have an HGV license? But I don't need to ask, because you've just turned up driving the International Truck of the Year.
I have.
An electric XF.
Yeah.
So how long have you had the license, and is it useful to have it?
Yeah, so I passed my tests back in 2007. DAF put me through that. And it's brilliant to have. Yeah, I've had it for a long time now, nearly 20 years. So, and I use it quite a lot. So I find it very helpful, especially when I was in my service role. If I wanted to go out and experience vehicles that maybe had issues, or go out on road tests, or go on press days and actually take people out in the vehicles to show them how to operate them properly. So for me, it's brilliant. I love having my license, and I keep up with my CPC, and I drive quite a bit. I try and drive a lot, actually. And of course, the trucks nowadays are lovely to drive.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's very good to have it. Yeah.
Especially that electric.
EVs are unbelievable. So smooth and such a nice thing to drive, and the power's there as well with the electric. So yeah, lovely bits of kit to drive.
See, we lose readers when I put an electric truck on the cover, because there's so much negativity about it. But from a driving point of view, they're phenomenal.
They are. They really are. They're lovely, lovely trucks. And we're seeing a few more on the road now. So I suppose it is very new technology, but it's started to come, so soon there will be a common thing on the magazine, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure as well. So have truck manufacturers become too obsessed with technology and forgotten that operators mainly want reliability?
I suppose we are very driven by legislation. There's a lot of good safety legislation coming at us, and it's needed, of course. It does bring a lot more technology on the vehicles. So whether that's really driven by us as manufacturer or more legislation, I think it's the legislation. We have to keep up with it. There's a lot of good safety options that have gone on vehicles now. And actually, really, with the technology we've got and how good it is, hopefully that should make the vehicle more reliable, rather than this concept that a lot more technology with ECUs and more wiring and more this and more that, they'd be unreliable. I think what we've seen over time is actually these systems become more reliable. And as long as the dealers and the technicians are trained on that system, because that's where we sometimes get a bit of downtime when it's a new system and they've got to look at it for the first time. But once we get the training out there, then actually they normally become more reliable. So, and yeah, I mean, we've got a huge amount of technology on the vehicles now. But
So keeping with legislation then, if Euro 7 was cancelled tomorrow, would you be pleased?
If it was cancelled tomorrow, no, I think we're on that path to meet it. I know it's only a small side of the emissions now, but I think actually it's going to help fuel again, which is important for operators, customers. So no, I think we're on it. I know it's demanding on manufacturers and their product development teams, but actually I think once we get there, new engines, better fuel, probably more reliability on those, I think actually we're on that path now. So I think if they maybe if they moved it forward a bit, that might be better. I don't know, or gave us more clear timings on stuff. But for us, no, I think we're on that path, and it'll be good for operators.
Okay. Electric trucks remain too expensive for many operators. Do you think politicians have underestimated how difficult this transition will be?
Yeah, so obviously new technology, not producing them mass yet, so there is a cost increase on EVs, definitely. But actually, I think with the plug-in grants that the government have supported, I think that really helps. We're doing some very good campaigns now on EVs to help reduce the cost on them. So the whole package now, with the plug-in grant and also the charging over time, they actually do become quite reasonably priced. So I think at the beginning, yes, but now I think we're in a good place with EV, and that plug-in grant was pretty important. So I hope politicians understand it. I suppose the thing that we're still behind on it is the actual infrastructure,
yeah,
and that is quite a cost. Having mobile chargers is brilliant, it's not so expensive, but really they're a sort of a stopgap. What you really want is a big charger to be able to charge these things, and there is quite an expense for that. So hopefully they're looking at that side of things. But all in all, the costs are coming down. It's becoming quite a competitive, reliable option for a customer.
Yeah, I mean, just now we were talking to the guy running Jack's Hill Cafe and Truck Stop here, and he's just put in a charger. I don't think he had much change at $200,000, and he's still having to wait another few months to get it hooked up.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and it might take a while to get the revenue back, but as soon as we get more on the road, and he was interested in looking at an EV truck, so it will grow.
So, which non-Packard owned truck manufacturer do you admire the most and why? That's not an easy one, is it?
Oh, wow. No, that's not an easy one. I think I respect all the manufacturers. There's some excellent product out there. We're all in a good place with vehicles and how they drive and how they look. But I suppose if I had a soft spot for anyone, it would be Scania. Because they really started me in my industry. They gave me the opportunity to be an apprentice back in 1996. And that's where I learnt my trade on Scanias, on the 3 Series, and just as they were starting to launch the 4 Series. So I suppose soft spot for Scania. I admire them all, but of course DAF is the best.
Yeah, good answer. Right, here's another tricky one. What's the biggest mistake DAF has made in the last 5 years?
Oh, wow. The biggest mistake. I don't think we've really made too many mistakes. We've made tough decisions. Whether they've turned out as mistakes, I don't know. So things like through COVID, we made a tough call to keep the line running, even though we couldn't get components. So that ended up delaying trucks a little bit. Was that a bad decision? Maybe not. We carried on delivering parts. I think that worked well for us. We had an issue around material when the costs were going up dramatically. So the vehicle was ordered today, built 6 weeks' time. The cost is dramatic. We had to make decisions around that. So maybe not many mistakes, but some tough decisions over the last 5 years. I'm glad that that's settled down a bit now, even though it's still not settled in the economy.
Yeah.
But no, not so many mistakes, but tough decisions, yes.
The new generation trucks are great, but they have price tags to match. When will the residual value catch up with the high selling prices?
Yep.
Incidentally, I asked your predecessor the same question. He said he would. This would change, but I've not seen evidence of it yet.
Yeah, that's true. So we always look at residual value. Obviously, it's governed by the market a bit. But of course we have done a lot over time. We're starting to add additional warranties to first choice vehicles that when they come back, we haven't had a huge amount of new generation vehicles come back yet to see where it lies on RVs. We're setting them higher. It's a good question, really. It should be better. I think we've only seen a handful of vehicles come back. We're seeing a lot of operators extending vehicles. Once we start getting new generation back in numbers, then we can really see where the RV's set. We've got the warranty to help it. So for us, really, RVs should be increasing, which will be great.
Right, and here's your final reader question. If we sat here again in 5 years' time, what would have to happen for you to say your time as MD had been a success?
Oh, great question. 5 years' time. Well, the first thing is, don't lose market leadership.
Yeah, definitely.
So that would be good. In 5 years, I could sit here and say we didn't. I think it will be successful when we've really rolled out our future technology on proactive repairs. So being able to contact vehicles when they're in trouble and bring them in before it has a breakdown, we're getting there on that. So that's exciting. So having that rolled out successfully. Having a lot more EV vehicles on there. We're trying to help customers build their infrastructure. Pack Our Power has been released. We've got a lot of chargers out there and battery storage facilities. So seeing that grow will be successful. And hopefully me still in the role. That would be my three or four things I'd like to see in 5 years' time.
Excellent. Great answers. Thank you very much for your time. And now please enjoy your breakfast.
Perfect. Thank you, Will. It's been good.
Thank you.